time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up on this Tuesday, September the 7th. Caleb Johnson in with my co-host Joe Patrick. Joe, how's it going?
Doing well, Caleb. Had a nice long weekend, you know. Football's back going, so it's just like sports mania, you know, obviously in our neck of the woods. So, I love this time of year. It's the best time of year, especially when you got a playoff race to pay attention to.
Yeah, it is. It's a good time of year. Been a weird week, I guess, specifically for the Braves. They are 72-64 on the season. A game and a half lead over the Phillies currently, which is less than we were a week ago when we had what felt like a very comfortable lead. And
the butts are clenched. The butts are firmly clenched right now.
Yeah, it really is. And I honestly, this is one of those things that we can kind of get into, is I don't know that it gets any, I don't know that there'll be any loosening anytime soon, you know? Like, I'm sorry, folks, that we're painting a very vivid picture for you just right out of the gate. Out of the gate, you know, we're just we're really Bob Rossing it right now with the mental images that we're giving you. But it's the honest truth in that the Braves go on this last road trip here this last week, and we knew it was going to be tough. And didn't come out exactly well. You faced tough competition in the Dodgers and the Rockies, and you say, well, the Rockies aren't that good. But as Joe has said on this podcast, and as Joe, you came on the show I was producing yesterday with Sam and Greg, and we're like, look, Rockies have the second best home record in Major League Baseball. That's why it makes sense. You know, that's why it was going to be so difficult. The one thing, are you taking any like moral victories away from this road trip in the fact that it was competitive the entire time?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. It's not a moral victory, but I do think seeing the way that this team has played does not make you so concerned about the way that this team is going to perform going from here on out. You know, it's not like you actually take something away. Like, I feel like when you talk about a moral victory, oftentimes that can happen at the beginning of a season when you're thinking about, okay, well, we didn't win the game, but at least, you know, we have good form from a player or something like that. In this case, it's more just like, you're not upset with the way that the game's unfolded. You're obviously upset with the results, and that is clearly hurting them in the standings, as you were just laying out the fact that the Phillies have closed it to a game and a half. But I don't think that you look at those games and really feel any worse about this team going forward, especially when they're playing against kind of weaker competition like they're going to be playing on this homestand. That includes the Rockies, who are a totally different team when they go on the road. I mean, there's a reason this team is, what, like 10 games under 500 right now, despite the fact that they have one of the best home records in all of baseball, which is the fact that they just go on the road and are one of the worst teams in baseball. So, I do feel like the Braves are still in a position to play really well on this homestand. And you know, maybe they're not going to win whatever it was, like 16 of 18 or whatever that streak was that they had earlier this month. But, you know, I do think that they should go into these series with every expectation of winning these series against the Nationals, Marlins, and Rockies, if not sweeping some of them. I think that the Braves are that much more talented than some of these teams that have, especially when you look at like a team like the Nationals, who really just sold off their entire team. So I think that the Braves still, despite the fact that this lead has shrunk, I think it was actually kind of predictable that was going to happen during this stretch of games. And I think that honestly, you know, I'm a little relieved that this team still has, you know, a division lead. I thought it was possible that the division lead could have gone away completely. The Phillies haven't been quite as good as I thought they would be against some of their competition. But yeah, I mean, I think that you look at this team and you still are pretty confident in what they're going to do. But of course, there are some reasons for concern we're going to talk about with things that are going on in the rotation and elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. What are you feeling after this stretch of games?
Predictable is one of those places that I'm at, where if you had told me, you know, over that six-game stretch, or well, no, it was seven games, right? That they were going to win two, you know, okay.
So I should clarify, the stretch of games I was kind of referring to, which included the home series against both the Yankees and Giants, just because like those, okay, that was kind of the start of like of your games against more difficult teams. But anyway, your point stands. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think it's, you know, if they had pulled out a win against the Dodgers, if they had pulled out a win against the Yankees, you know, and dropped a series to the Giants, I wouldn't have been that surprised. So it's one of those, I guess I'm just not surprised by anything. And, you know, to your point of the fact that we honestly, knowing how daunting this trip or the stretch of games was going to be, could have come back with, you know, being down second in the division, and to not have that happen is a positive, especially like you said, when you're going to face some competition coming up. I mean, you're going to get the Rockies at home, who, while being, you know, like you said, really a really good home team, are terrible away. You get the Nationals, who are selling off. You get the Marlins, who, thank goodness, pulled out a couple of games against the Phillies to kind of help the Braves be in this game and a half lead in the division. And I guess the thing that I wanted to get to out of this recent road trip was a positive, and that how impressive is it that the Braves have all of their infielders with more than 25 home runs, only the second team in Major League Baseball to pull that feat off besides the 2008 Marlins. Like that was something really cool, really, really cool to see on Saturday. Go ahead.
To me, it's so encouraging. Like, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because obviously we're focused on, you know, this stretch of the season and trying to make the playoffs and everything. But I can't stop thinking about the way that these infielders have performed this year and not think about how good this team could be next year when Ronald Acuna Jr. is back, when, you know, maybe, knock on wood, you get Mike Soroka back potentially. This team could be like a legitimate World Series favorite coming out of the NL next year. If you can get an infield, and specifically Austin Riley, just the way that he's elevated his game this year to being a guy who's surely going to rack up NL MVP votes. That's just like, you can never predict that kind of leap, a player making the leap like that to a new level of performance. But I mean, it just shows how important that he's been to this team this year. When you've lost guys like Ronald Acuna Jr., guys like Marcelo Ozuna, that he's been able to step up and be one of those run producers, one of those, you know, power centers in the lineup. Truly somebody that I think pitchers are now kind of scared to pitch to. And so it's just a huge credit to him. And I just cannot wait to see this team at full strength. It's like the one thing I can't get out of my mind this year is just all the things that have gone wrong for this team. And it's just like, I feel cheated that we haven't gotten to see what this team is fully capable of. And so that's why I'm like kind of looking forward to next year. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just been absolutely incredible what these guys have done.
Well,
playing every day too.
Yeah. And I think like you talk about Austin Riley, and obviously like he's been the focal point, just because, I mean, he is having a season that he's going to have his name in the National League MVP conversation. I don't think he's going to win it, but he's going to have his name right there in it. But the guy who's been a part of this infield, who is making this record happen, who I just feel like we haven't appreciated enough, is Ozzie Albies. I mean, whether he was the one who hit the home run on Saturday that made this, you know, made this possible, like he reached 25 home runs, and then Sunday leading off against a guy who is making his major league, you know, his first appearance in the major leagues, and he takes him long. And that was just like, oof. You know, Feldman? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it was like that guy's literally, for the rest of his life, never going to forget his first batter in Major League Baseball, you know, giving up a home run. But that, I mean, that's kind of like, that's where Ozzie has been, kind of slowly ramping up, because I don't think he had the greatest start to the season. But he's just been kind of so consistent and not necessarily spectacular that you kind of just take him for granted. You know, he is a guy, like, I'm with you. I can't wait for this team to get to full strength. But I think right now, like, they're really competitive as is. When you have this infield kind of taking the brunt of the offense and really performing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Braves have played 136 games this year, and Dansby Swanson has played 136 of 136. Austin Riley, a guy who has struggled with injury, especially in 2020, he had a quad injury that really kind of hampered him. He's played 135 of the 136. Freddie Freeman's played 135 of the 136. And Ozzie Albies has played 132 of the 136. So these guys have been relied on so much by Brian Snicker. And it's like, you know, in a normal year where you have your full assortment of tools and options, you would give those guys rests, right? But the Braves are not in that position. They've really been kind of all hands on deck all season long, literally like since the get-go, really. So it's just a huge testament to those guys that not only, you know, you might say, well, you know, they're hitting, they're putting up these home runs and production numbers because they've played so many games. But I would actually say that, you know, when you play that many games, it's hard to keep your level of play at a high enough level to hit 25 homers. You know, it's just very hard to kind of keep yourself that consistent over the course of a year. So it's a huge credit to those guys. And especially, you know, Ozzy is the kind of player who throws his body around. You know, like if you're a Braves fan, you watch these teams every day, you see, you know, how physical his game is, you know. He plays it hard, very much like Ronald Acuna Jr. And so for that reason, it's just really impressive that those guys have been able to keep going. And, you know, Dansby talked about this to media a few days ago, saying that, you know, he really gives a lot of credit to Brian Snicker for allowing them to do what they need to do to be able to play these games. Like if they don't feel like they need or want to do like a typical warm-up day that might tax their body a little bit more if they're feeling fatigued, that's fine. You know, the coaching staff lets these guys just figure it out. That's really, I think, a huge feather in Brian Snicker's cap. You know, that's the kind of thing we talk about with managers, just like not that are really good in the clubhouse and keeping that kind of clubhouse camaraderie, but just like the spirits up. When players feel like they're being treated like professionals, I think they really respect that. They respect that in the manager. So I also want to give Brian Snicker a little bit of credit as well. But yeah, it's just really, really impressive what these guys have been doing.
Well, and I think to your point about Snit is the fact that he does something that guys seem to constantly talk about that I struggle with the fact that it has to be looked at this like old school philosophy, which is Brian Snicker listens to his players, whether it's his pitchers, or, you know, are you talking about, you know, those other pieces of guys, hey, you know, body's feeling a little taxed today, why don't we do a lighter warm-up, you know, hey, is that all right with you sort of thing. Like the fact that that has to get like applauded is unfortunate, you know, and that honestly gets looked at as, oh, well, that's an older manager, you know, he's trusting his eyes instead of the numbers and the specific regiment that the training staff says they have to go through, all of these sorts of things. It's just like it's one of those things that makes you think, like, how have we not realized that we've gone too far with a lot of things that numbers. I feel like Joe Buck right now of being, you know.
When it's he like you can't talk. Yeah. Right, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm about to say, I feel like Joe Buck and John Smoltz right now of the, oh, man, the old days, the old days. But for real, like, it's there is this aspect of I feel like we overlook managers who just listen to their players and in return get a lot out of their players because they want to hold up their end of the bargain. I think about, you know, Charlie Morton has been a guy who said multiple times that, look, I go into the dugout after an inning and Snit's kind of coming over and asking me, you got another one in you, or are we good, sort of things. And then you have Charlie Morton who throws seven innings on Sunday, you know, and a big win to close out that road trip series. So it's it's important. It matters.
I'll go a step further and say that I think that a lot of the discourse around, like, you know, the manager doing these kinds of things with players and like handling the roster like this, I feel like a lot of it's driven by this kind of like this like fantasy sports culture and this like culture of just like, yeah, like just looking at numbers and being kind of very granular in that respect and kind of like, yeah, I, you know,
it's
I just,
because It's because Moneyball happened one time, and now
right. just yeah. Well, and I will even say, like, I would firmly have placed myself in that camp, as particularly before I started covering this team professionally, because before that, I was not really as in tune with the day-to-day grind that baseball is. Like, I always heard that. You know, you always, like, hear yeah. players talk about it, whatever. But, like, you aren't living it, so you don't really experience it in the same way until you're talking to these guys every day, until you're seeing what they go through and just how stressful and hard just surviving a Major League Baseball season is.
And I was just about to say, and I mean, it is taxing for a reporter who is literally just sitting in the press box every day. You know, you have those moments of like, all right, yeah, all right, I'm going, yeah. you know, and we're just like the lazy ones sitting and having to think of new creative things to write about or to say about this team. Like they're the ones going out there and playing. And so, yeah, right. I definitely understand just getting again, that different side of things.
I don't want to call anybody out because again, I'll hold my hand up and say I was in that camp. I totally understand that point of view.
Yeah. Speaking of Charlie Morton, he got a little chunk of change,
a little something,
his
something
way. Yeah. So Charlie yesterday, I thought it was interesting that Alex Anthopoulos decided to kind of make this news known the day after Charlie throws seven really strong innings. That he's getting a contract extension for next season. It's $20 million, and there is a club option for 2023 for the same $20 million, and there'll be no buyout. So how you feeling about this?
Love it. I love this deal. And in my opinion, like, I don't know. I haven't really been clued in on Twitter or anything. I don't know if there's, like, a discussion on the value proposition of this, you know, is 20 million too much or too, or is it good, a good deal or anything like that? I'm not even concerning myself with that right now. I think that it's really good for a couple reasons. One, I think that it shows that the Braves are willing to spend, you know, like, and if they have a player that's out there like Charlie Morton, who they really value and want to keep as part of their organization, they will go splash $20 million out there and do it. You know, he's on $15 million this year, so it will be a pay rise for him. But, you know, I think that that's a good sign, first of all, that the team was willing to go out there and do that. And second of all, I just think it's going to be very good for this rotation, because I think Charlie Morton is a very, obviously been, you know, a rock for this rotation this year. I know he had some inconsistencies, especially early on this season. You know, he kind of infamous for that one inning where he just kept on getting hit around, give up a 3-run homer or something that would kind of knock his stat line out of whack. But for the most part, his performance really has been extremely good this year, like way better than I even expected from him. And I expected a pretty good year, to be perfectly honest. So I don't see any signs of him slowing down. You know, I know that he's 37. I keep reading that when I see his bio, but I refuse to believe it when I see him pitch, because just like the way he throws, there's no pitcher in baseball, in my opinion, that like has action on his pitches the way that Charlie Morton is able to throw that, drop that curveball in there the way he wants, the way, you know, just everything about him, man. He's just so good, and again, he just shows no sign of slowing down. If you look at the spin rates of, like, you know, the top the pitches that have had the most spin on them this year in baseball, it's all Charlie Morton. Like, it is all Charlie Morton's pitches. So it just goes to show that if he can still do that with a baseball, he's going to have value, and the Braves are clearly valuing him.
I like that Charlie Morton is going to stay with this team. I don't like this deal. I think they overpaid for him, and I know that's being highly critical, and that's looking at something, you know, like, I feel like everybody right now wants to be very excited about this deal, because Charlie Morton is dependable. Like, he is a guy that this team has relied on and will continue to rely on. And I think that the Braves want to see him retire as a Brave, and see that moving forward. I don't know. I worry about these early deals. And I think the Braves are doing this right now to go ahead and get it done, because they want Charlie to be a part of this rotation next season. And I guess there's going to be somebody out there who would have been willing to probably pay more. to kind of give him a one-year deal to help them win a World Series sort of thing, which is, I'm sure, what Alex Anthopoulos sees him doing next year when everybody gets healthy again. It's just one of those things that it brings me back to Drew Smyly, where, you know, the Braves, I think, overpaid for Drew Smyly a year ago. And now he's a part of this conversation we can have in a little bit of what his role on the team is now heading into the postseason. And I guess I just get a little bit concerned that we're the Braves in having him here next year and having a club option for him to play another year. The Braves at some point are going to get stuck with a Charlie Morton who falls off, who just doesn't have it anymore, and age has caught up with him, and maybe he's ready to hang it up and that sort of thing. And so I just, I don't know. I feel so torn because I really like the fact that Charlie Morton is back with the team. I just think they overpaid for him, and now that's I think it was Scott Coleman of Talking Chop who tweeted out a couple days ago, or it had to have been yesterday, that this is now I think $120 million locked up for next season. So outside of a Freddie Freeman deal, not a whole lot of moves are going to be made around this team, and not a lot of changes are going to be made because the Braves don't have the money. Aren't going to be willing to spend any more money. And that makes me uncomfortable, I guess.
Well, yeah. So I guess from my perspective is I'm still holding off on the value judgment of it in terms of the contract. Cause I don't know yet what the costs actually are of spending the $20 million. Does that mean you can't re-sign Freddie Freeman? If that's the case, then yeah, I'm just kind of throwing it out just like hypothetically, if like that was the cost, then it's not a good deal, right? If they can't, like, if they have major holes, like in the bullpen or whatever, going into next year, because they didn't have, you know, X amount of money to throw at somebody who signed elsewhere, then that's a big cost. You know, like there will be costs. It's hard for me to determine right now exactly what those costs are going to be. And I would also say that, you know, the Braves, I'll be interested to see the way that Major League Baseball payrolls shake out next year and the Braves and how the Braves align with that, because, you know, the Braves have probably made more in gate receipts than a lot of teams in Major League Baseball this year because they opened the gates up fully sooner than I think anybody. Where I think the Braves were the first Major League Baseball team to go full. The Rangers open. Yeah, but they're opening Texas. Full and like they weren't filling the stadium. Yeah. they did like for that opening day game, I think, or something like that. So, but like other, you know, the Braves have probably had more fans come through their turnstiles than any other team in baseball this year. I would happen to guess. So, yeah, I mean, I understand. I understand the critique for sure.
No, it's so funny because so obviously like we don't talk a whole lot before we go to record, other than just like we knew we were gonna, you know, throw out this contract deal. And I feel like I watched your like bubble burst as I over the course of me, like I was looking, you know, yeah, obviously like me and Joe are on Zoom like talking to each other, and so I feel like I saw your face just be like, well, man, Caleb, like I was just going to talk about the positive things of the, you know, and honestly, like the positives are, and I wrote them down because it is important to kind of grasp what Charlie Morton has meant to this team this year. 3.5 WAR, like that is impressive and very, very helpful. He's 13-5 this season. That's the fifth best record in Major League Baseball. He's got 185 strikeouts, which is the 10th best in Major League Baseball right now. Like he is vitally important to the Braves' success and the Braves' postseason if they want to go on a run. And so I understand wanting to lock him up to a deal. It just makes me slightly nervous. It also, I think, too, here's the other aspect of this. It makes me wonder about what's gotten done with the Freddie Freeman contract or what numbers they expect to have with the Freddie Freeman contract. And maybe are they like slightly backloading Freddie's deal that is assuming to be coming up next, you know, that's going to come up in the offseason. And so maybe that offsets a little bit. Like, yeah. I don't know if I'm thinking too hard or if that just is a more realistic thing of how this got done right now. When Travis d'Arnaud, who just signed, what, 2 weeks ago, he kept his deal. Like, he was making $8 million. He's going to be making $8 million for the next two seasons. And he's also, like, he's older. He's a guy who's shown some age. And so to see a guy like Morton get a pay increase, a substantial one at that, I think that was what concerned me.
I would probably feel very different about this, just initially, my initial reactions to this Charlie Morton deal, if it was for more than a year. And of course, it has that option, but that's clearly just like a free club option.
Exactly.
Basically. So it's really, we're talking about a 1 year,
sure.
1 year on the books here. And so I guess that's the reason why I'm not as concerned about the money at this point, because it's only affecting next year's payroll. And so, you know, maybe that is important. Maybe it prevents them from signing somebody they would otherwise want to sign, but I just don't see the kind of long-term pitfalls potentially if he were to get hurt or something.
That's because you're not Eeyore and I am.
And, well, I would also ask this I'll just ask you, but I would ask this question to anybody who would feel the way that you do about this contract, which is that, like, I like to see the Braves spend money. Is something I said off the top was, like, the fact that they did give him $20 million was a very encouraging sign to me. That signals that they are willing to spend the money for the players that they think are going to help them win a World Series next year. That they aren't skimping out and thinking, oh, well, we could sign Charlie Morton for $20 million, or we could go into free agency and find maybe some value on, like, a more Drew Smiley-esque type of deal. I like the fact that they have a guy they like, they want to lock him down, and they went ahead and did it.
I can't argue with that. Like, that is the one side of this thing that, you're right, the Braves actually did go spend some money, and it's funny, they finally go spend some money, and I'm like, hey, you know, you should have been saving more. And I think it's just, it's the one side of Alex Anthopoulos, hindsight, I guess, is a little bit different, but it is the one aspect of Alex Anthopoulos making deals that I always just get a little bit frustrated with, is the fact that he's willing to spend on pitchers and more often than not is not willing to spend on offense. And offense is always what ends up being the downfall come postseason time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the side of it. This is frustrating, but you're right. The Braves are spending money. And the Braves are spending money on someone who I think will be dependable, although it's just the little voice in the back of my head always goes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore the age. I make jokes about how he's like Benjamin Button or whatever, but it's real. Like, you know, his body is not, he's not Benjamin Button. His body is aging like any other human being. So it is a risk. Like, there's definitely risk there. Denying that whatsoever, but I just like the fact that they have a known quantity in hand and they were willing to go out and spend for him. You know, that's to me what differentiates this from like a Cole Hamels signing, where I think they signed him for $19 million for his 1 year. And he was much more of an unknown quantity for the team. He was coming off of an injury. Of course, he then went ahead and got hurt and ended up pitching a few innings for the team Three innings. Oh my goodness. unbelievable. And, yeah. Now I'm just thinking about I'm sorry.
The man got $20 million total because he got a million from the Dodgers to not pitch. Can't stand that guy.
Anyway, so I don't know. I also think that it's what Charlie Morton just brings from a clubhouse perspective and all that's important too. I think that he's like a really good leader for a staff, which is always good to have in tow. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the Braves have sought after these kinds of established pitchers that seems like they've always had one in the clubhouse, whether that was going out and getting Dallas Keuchel in 2019, even though that was more of a veteran bullpen already.
Rough.
Yeah. Even with the Braves, he was just never the guy. And then the Cole Hamels deal, which obviously was catastrophic. So, you know, these kinds of deals can definitely go sideways for you. But I just feel like if this is the kind of profile of pitcher the Braves like to have just in terms of the veteran experience, then I would much rather them overspend for a guy that they have seen produce good results for them as Charlie Morton has this year. So that's where I'm on it.
Well, let's go from one guy who is in the rotation to another guy who was in the rotation and now is not, or maybe he comes back, who knows, Drew Smyly, who, was it 3-4 days ago that Brian Snicker announced he was going to bring him out of the bullpen? And then we saw that on Saturday against the Rockies, Drew Smyly comes in, faces three batters, gets them all out, even has a strikeout in there. And where do we go with Drew Smyly now?
Yeah, I don't know. He's a worry for me. Definitely a concern, because I thought that he was going to play a big part in this team's success down the stretch, you know, pitching in the rotation the way he was kind of midsummer. But, you know, he's really fallen off here. And especially when you look at the velocity, it's very concerning. And when you match that up with the amount of innings he's pitched this season in comparison to what he's done the last several years, ever since he got hurt after the 2016 season, you know, it's not encouraging. I'm not encouraged that, like, or I'm not thinking that he's going to, like, bounce back at all this year and become, revert back to the pitcher that he was. I feel like the only thing that's going to bring him back is a prolonged, like, an off season, essentially, to, like, get his arm, let his arm fully rest and come back at full strength. But obviously, I don't think that's going to be with the Braves next year either. So it's tough. And hopefully for his sake, he can kind of roll with this change and just kind of like make himself, you know, a bullpen arm and still be able to play a part for this team, be a productive member of this team, and hopefully make the playoff roster. But, you know, my hopes for him are really diminished from what they were, you know, even 3 weeks ago or so, I'd say. The one thing I will say for him that might go in his favor is that there are some other concerns with this Braves rotation right now, especially when you look at guys like Ian Anderson. He looked really good in his first start back, but then he said it was his worst start of his career in his most recent start against the Rockies. And then I don't know if he struck out a batter since he's come back, which is very interesting. I know he didn't have one in the one really good start that he had. He had no strikeouts.
I don't know that I had paid attention to that.
Yeah. And so
I hadn't thought about that.
I think I heard that he only had like 3 swings and misses against the Rockies.
You're right.
So not great. Not great stuff for him.
Yeah, you're right. He hasn't had a strikeout in his last 2 starts. Wow. That flew right past me. And I mean, obviously, yeah.
I only noticed because we have to pull highlights after games for the station. And usually we like go, like the Braves will put out videos of like the starting pitcher and their strikeouts. And I'm the headline on the pitching video for when Ian Anderson was just like, Ian Anderson like pitches 6 strong innings or whatever. And then like all the highlights are just ground balls and stuff.
Yeah, well, it was Thursday with Tukey. Wasn't any better. Like he went, because Ian Anderson went with 3 innings on Saturday. Tukey went 3 innings on Thursday, gave up 5 runs.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that's another concern. So again, yeah. This is reason for, like, you know, maybe Smiley's chances in the rotation aren't completely shot because of some of these struggles that these guys are having. And of course, we were saying, or at least I was saying, a week or two ago that, you know, this Braves rotation is in great shape. You got too many guys. Now you're looking at maybe Kyle Muller comes back into the picture. I thought Kyle Muller might come back into the picture as a reliever, but not as a starter. I think that he might have another chance to prove himself as a starter, to see, you know, give him the Braves management one last shot to see what he's got. But yeah, I mean, there certainly are positions up for grabs, I think, for these guys. It's just who's going to be in the best form, you know, come the end of the season when you need to kind of pick 4 guys to roll with through a postseason.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Well, and for Kyle Muller, they're gonna have to move his starts around, because he's in Gwinnett right now, and he just pitched last night, had a really impressive performance last night for the Stripers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the big thing now is that, look, Snit announced over the weekend that Fried's going to pitch tonight. There's a to be announced tomorrow, and then back to Enoa on Thursday. Well, so you're not going to be able to go with Kyle Muller because he just pitched last night. Do you turn to Tukey? I mean, I think so, even though he had the rough start in Colorado. There's, you know, or... do you go to Smyly?
You could go to Smyly. You could just treat his the inning that he threw in relief as like a side, and then go to Smyly. I think that's probably what I would do. I don't know. It's very interesting. You know, they've got so many different options they could go to. None of them, which are looking great right now, but You know, with Smiley, the whole thing is like, can he just not give up the home run ball? Like, that's been the thing that has plagued him all year. He has one of the highest home run rates of all the pitchers on the staff, both in the bullpen as well. It's like him. It's Smiley, Will Smith, who's the closer, and then like Santana and Josh Tomlin, I think, are like the top four. So, but yeah, I mean, like if he can cut that out, then, you know, but that's a big if. It's like if.
I was about to say, you just had to bring up.
If I had $1 million.
Oh, man. So, Nationals in a 3-game series. So, 9 games coming up that the Braves are going to play at home. Which has, I think, has to be in their favor, especially when you get the Nationals, who are giving up, waving the white flag, the Marlins, who aren't waving the white flag, but should be, because, man, they've been really bad, and then one of the worst road teams in the Rockies, and I think a time that you can kind of give it back to Colorado for how things went at their place. I guess what concerns you the most upcoming for the Braves?
I think it's this issue that we've just been talking about, the rotation. I think on the positive side, I think this team should mash these teams, like offensively. Yeah. I think, you know, the bats were quiet, more quiet, I guess, against the Dodgers, but you were still getting some home runs. You were getting some home runs from guys like Jorge Soler, Dansby Swanson. You know, they were just like solo homers because you weren't getting that many guys on base. But, you know, this team has continued to hit relatively well on this stretch of games on this road trip. And so I just expect them to come home and be in really good form. And I think that that's one of those things where, you know, when the pitching is struggling a little bit, when they are trying to find themselves, you need other guys to pick them up. And I think that that's where this lineup can come in a big way. And give them cushion and just like not even put that much pressure on these guys to go out and perform perfectly. Just kind of, you know, go out there and give up, you know, 3 runs over 5 innings, whatever it is, you know, just give a decent outing and just let this offense just kind of carry you home for the rest of this homestand against these weaker teams.
And the Braves are going to need to do it because they just pulled up the Phillies schedule. They are currently in a series against the Brewers, who they beat 12-0 yesterday. So that's
crazy.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just upcoming for the Phillies. So they're right, like I said, they're amongst a series against the Brewers. They get the Rockies at home before the Braves do, and then they get the Cubs. So if the Braves stumble any, the Phillies are going to be right there to pass them.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Braves and the Phillies, I think both have five of the easiest records in baseball the rest of the way through. So they both have easy schedules. And I think that that sets up a situation where, you know, it's either team's race to lose, you know, like whichever one does not perform against these teams that are very beatable and they should be beating is the team that's going to slip up. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all that shakes out. I mean, I can totally see a situation where we get to the end of the season and the Braves play the Phillies in the penultimate season of the year, or series of the year, and you could go into that series with it being like tied or like, you know, like a 2-run lead or a 2-game lead, something like that. Yeah. That could be a pivotal series where the winner of that series kind of flips the lead in the division, and then the Braves will of course wrap up with the Mets. So it's going to be super, super tight, and you just got to try to win these games that you should be winning. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, if anything, I mean, it's just like I said last week, it is going to be exciting to watch. Like, it is going to be,
for sure.
I don't think, and you know, we're a week from, like I said, from me saying this, I don't think either team is going to just pull away with this in some massive lead. So it's going to be fun, and it is going to keep us plenty busy, like you said at the start of the show, with college football back. There's a lot of things to kind of attract our attention, and the Braves will definitely be amongst that. Is, I don't know. We'll see where we are a week from now.
It's fun. It's fun when you know, you obviously want to win the division, so you want to have like a million game lead.
Sure.
But it's also fun to be in a race, you know, to just like, because all these games matter, you know, even just playing Marlins, playing the Nationals on a Wednesday or something. You know, like, these games are going to feel like playoff games. So it's going to be very fun to watch, and especially the way that Braves are just hitting bombs recently. You know, those are going to be even more impactful here. And I think the, you know, the crowd, when the crowd pops when the ball goes over the fence, you know, that gets even, just amplifies even more during these times.
Absolutely. Anything else, Joe, you want to get to before we get out of here?
I think we're good for this week.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to Batter Up. Thank you for catching it on Facebook Live. And, of course, we'll post it everywhere on the Odyssey app and wherever you listen to
podcasts.
Everywhere
on the internet. Everywhere exactly. On the internet.
For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a great one.